Well, tonight on Coast to Coast AM, you're going to hear for the very first time Raelynn Allen, The Obregon Chronicles. This is a story that she believes is so unbelievable that even she, the one who wrote it and lived it, has trouble believing it actually happened. In a moment, we will discuss The Obregon Chronicles on Coast to Coast AM. Raelynn Allen, researcher, writer, teacher of esoteric mysteries, who has a family background which includes covert government ties. We'll talk about that. Her first husband was a nuclear physicist who created the electronic warfare program for the United States Navy. Raelynn has been part of a Navy research project on stress, but had no idea that the U.S. government considers the families of military and government personnel as government property, she says, to be used in their experiments as unwitting pawns in spy games. Here is Raelynn. Ray, how are you? Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, George. Nice to talk to you.
I have heard about you for years.
Well, you know, I have to ask you. You were from St. Louis, right?
Yes.
Didn't you interview my husband when he was in jail there?
I do believe I did a long time ago.
I thought you did. But of course, that would have been before I had any idea who I had married.
And he has passed on.
Now, yes, right? He died in 2005.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. This is very... Some of the things you're going to hear tonight from Ray, as we'll just call her Ray, absolutely riveting, scary, frightening, and in some cases, Ray, almost unbelievable. Would you agree?
Even I don't believe it sometimes. I'm serious. Even I question. And I'm questioning all the time. Yes, what I'm going to be telling people has happened to me is going to be so difficult for people to believe that I want them to know that even I have difficulty believing it, and I'm the one that lived it. And not only did I live it, I have spent the last 10 years after Gunter and I separated in 1996, not by the wishes of either of us, but, you know, the government separated us. And for the last, since 1996, I have been doing as much investigation as I could to literally prove to myself that I wasn't crazy. And finally, I have come to I've come to terms with it. If you'd talked to me back in 1996, I probably wouldn't even have shared any of this with you.
And this journey for you to get these answers has taken you into areas that I bet you never thought you would go.
Well, how many people ever thought they'd go to Mars or go meet the king of the earth, the king of the world, or, begin asking people, have you ever heard anybody talk about a war going on up in space where our pilots are actually out there fighting aliens? No. It's sort of like I would whisper these things, across the, the table in restaurants with people. And, finally I realized that I'm not the only one who has had these experiences.
Have you talked to Ed Grimsley, or do you know Ed at all?
Oh, yes, I just talked to him. He's okay. The one that introduced me to one of those space pilots' wives. I can't think of her name right now, but she told me the story about her husband, and her husband's story parallels part of my husband's story. And so it's like, one by one by one, people are coming out of the woodwork to corroborate these things that, literally I have witnessed with my own eyes or have been there.
Right. For everyone to understand where we're going with all this tonight, because this, your work is about everything. I mean, this is about everything. Time travel, aliens, government scandals, strange things in space. I mean, just about everything. But let's go back for you, at least, to the beginning. Childhood, normal? What do you think?
Oh, I had a perfectly normal childhood, except when I was 11 years old, first of all, let me just say that I four children, two parents and two grandparents in the house. It was the Waltons. Literally, it was the Waltons.
Times two.
Yes. And then my sister got married, and she and her husband moved in with their two kids. And so we had four generations in the same house, and it was just wonderful, wonderful childhood. But then something very strange happened to me. And it all happened at the same time. I had my appendix. I was 11 years old. I had my appendix out. And this will make sense. This will make sense as I, you know, as I go sure. on in the story. But I had my appendix out. And when they brought me home, I suddenly found myself in our orchard. And you literally had to go down a steep cliff to get in the orchard. And I'm going, oh, my God, if my mother finds me here, I'm going to be she's going to kill me. I'm not even supposed to be out of the house. And for some reason, I looked down at my stomach, and there next to the bandages on my appendix scar was a new scar. So I took myself back to the house, got myself out of my muddy pajamas that I was in, put new clothes on, and as when my mother changed the dressing, I said, Mom, where did that other scar come from? And she says, oh, my God, did the doctor cut you in the wrong place? Uh-oh. You know, she was just furious. So she goes into the doctor, shows him the scar, and said, how dare you? What did you do? She's just screaming at the doctor. And he said, look, you can tell by that scar that it's an old scar. And she says, she's never had that scar before. She hasn't had that scar, you know, since you did this. So it was all over. We never said anything more about the scar, but I had it the rest of my life, a little hairline scar. Okay, that same year, my father took me to meet a friend of his, a friend of the family, of his family, Walt Disney. So he and I were at Disneyland, and Walt Disney came to the restaurant to meet me. So there I am, meeting Walt Disney, and of course I'm so shy and horribly ugly at the time that, you know, I...
You know what I always say, Ray, there is no ugly, it's just different, just different.
Different, yes. And then it couldn't have been more than a month after he took me to meet Walt Disney that he took me to meet a friend of his in Winnemucca, Nevada. And we walk up to the door, and he says to his friend Carl, Carl, I'd like you to meet the princess. That's what he calls me, the princess. Uh-huh. And Carl called his son to come over and say, come, meet the princess. And this gawky-looking teenager comes running out and looks at me up and down and said, she's no princess. She's nothing but a freckled, frizzy-haired freak. And then he runs away on his bicycle. And I was so mortified that I hated the name Carl my entire life.
I love it.
So this will remind me when I get to the part of the story about Austria, when Gunther and I went to Austria. Remind me to tell you what we did in the Glan River, because it's too early to tell you that part now, okay. But it ties everything in.
I will do that.
Okay.
Okay, so the kid, Ray, grows up.
Yes.
Anything strange along the way beyond that?
Yes. And it is something that is so strange that I have never talked about it before, George, to anybody. Can you believe this?
Well, here we go.
And here you're asking me a question. I had a fiancé who was killed in Vietnam. I was 19 at the time. And so I get on with my life, and I'm, you know, I found a job and moved to Seattle, and I'm working in Seattle, and finally I got sick and tired of the job, and so I joined the Air Force. And I packed up my apartment and, you know, shipped everything back to my mother in California and packed my car, and I was headed for Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. But before I left, there was a knock on my door, and I had recognized... It was a man that I knew from Civil Air Patrol when I was in high school. I never was a member of Civil Air Patrol because I was a girl, and the girls' uniforms were so dorky that I refused to wear the uniforms. But I would go to the meetings, and I recognized this guy. He was my Civil Air Patrol leader, and he had a friend of his with him that I had known from, you know, from the days back in high school. And he said, we've been told that your fiancé is still alive and that he is living with the Montagnards, and he doesn't know who he is, and he won't come home with us. And so we felt if we took you over there, you'd be okay, that he'd recognize you and he would come home. So that was what I was told. It was a complete lie, but I believed it. So I said, hey, look, I've just joined the Air Force. I've got to be there, you know, in 5 days. I'm leaving. And they said, oh, don't worry about that. Here's some official papers. And we have transferred you from the Air Force to another agency. This is called a lateral transfer. And I was transferred from the Air Force to the State Department.
And this was a legitimate transfer?
From what I gather, it was a legitimate transfer.
Okay.
So they took me to some facility, probably about an hour and a half away from Washington, D.C., where for 6 weeks I trained.
By the way, unless I'm going crazy, I hear someone singing in the background.
It's my doggie.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe, Ray, I was losing it. Okay.
No, it's my doggie.
It
I don't allow
almost,
him in here, but...
He's almost human.
I know, he is almost human.
I might want to interview him later, too. I mean, that's pretty good. Okay.
Listen to him, isn't he? Oh, I guess I'd better open the door to stop him from doing that.
That's right. I knew I had great ears. I just knew it.
You do. The reason I'd locked him outside is there was a cat.
Well, let him in. Let him in so he'll calm down.
He's in, and but they were barking at the cat that was in the backyard. Well, anyway, I end up at some sort of an installation. There are literally like three people in the entire installation. It looks like an old closed military base of some sort. There was the cook, there was me, and there was my drill instructor. And basically all he did was run me for 6 weeks, you know, running, you know, a little bit of hand-to-hand combat, a little bit of, you know, gun training. But I didn't need a lot.
Were they training you for a purpose?
What they told me is that we were going over with a team of men, and they wanted to be sure that I did not.
They wanted you to carry your own.
That's exactly right, and they had to be sure that I would be able to keep up with them. And when I was a little girl, when I was younger, I was very athletic. I could beat almost every boy in our high school in track. So they really didn't have to do a lot to get me up to speed. But then afterwards, they sent me over to, etiquette training, where I was taught, you know, what glass to use, what spoon to use, what fork to use, because I was going to be going in under the cover of a Secretary of the State Department, and I would be at the embassy. And so one of the guys that was going over with me also had this cover as a State Department person, and supposedly, according to whatever, the two of us transferred from Germany back to Washington, D.C. And then, you know, we hadn't been there a week when we went on this trip to Southeast Asia. And it was a pretty awful trip, and I don't think I really want to go into all of it, but I was in a helicopter crash and
oh my God.
Went catatonic afterwards. And the next thing I really remember is not waking up, but suddenly I'm back in college and living with my parents, and it's sort of like, how in the world did this all happen?
You mean you don't remember anything after that?
Let's just say that there's a huge period that I do remember, but I don't want to tell it because it is so horrible. I may start crying.
Okay. Did you ever meet the fiancé? Which was the mission to go, I guess, right?
No, the mission was not that fiancé. And I guess now is the best time to tell it. My husband, Gunther, was a POW in the undeclared war in Southeast Asia. That was the fiancé that I was going over to rescue.
He was a CIA pilot, I'm told.
He was that. He was sent in on a mission to Laos to rescue the POWs that were over there. His team were all dressed in Russian uniforms. He was the only one that spoke Russian. He spoke fluent Russian from the time he was a child.
Okay.
He was raised in Austria when Austria was broken into the four countries, you know, the four, like Germany.
Yep.
And so France, Germany, Russia, and the United States each had a part of Austria. And one set of grandparents lived in the American quarter, and the other set lived in the Russian quarter. And so he learned to speak English and Russian at the same time he was, you know, when he was growing up. And so he spoke fluent Russian. Well, anyway, he was who we were rescuing. Now, I have no memory of ever meeting him on that trip, but it was confirmed to me that that was the fiancé. Now, if you remember, I told you a little bit about going over to Winnemucca, Nevada to
right.
meet my father's friend, Carl. Well, the teenager that called me a freckled, frizzy-haired freak was the man that I married when I was 40 years old.
No.
Yes.
Talk about synchronicity.
Well,
I hope he apologized for that.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. It was one of the most, well, I've got to get into that story now. We were in Austria. We had just completed the largest transfer of gold in the history of the planet, and we were out at a lodge that his family had owned, and where he had spent a lot of time as a little boy. And he took me to the River Glan, where he loved playing in the River Glan as he was a little boy. He said that the River Glan goes up into the Untersberg, and in the Untersberg are massive amounts of laboratories and, you know, technology that is 200 to 2,000 years ahead of us are in all of the underground laboratories that are under the Untersberg.
Right.
And if people don't know what the Untersberg is, just remember the Sound of Music where Julie Andrews is singing, you know, the world is alive, and that mountain that they focus on, that's the Untersberg. And so we were playing in the River Glan, which flows into the Untersberg, and he said to me, do you remember that day your dad brought you over to Nevada to meet me? And I said, you're crazy. My dad never brought me to meet you. You're just nuts. What have you been smoking? You know, it was all said good-naturedly, of course. And he goes, freckled, frizzy-haired freak, freckled, frizzy-haired freak. And I just said, oh, my God, you're that one. Oh, my God, how I could not have known that. I knew his name was Gunter Karl Rusbacher. I knew he was called Carly as a little boy. And it was Carly who had called me a freckled, frizzy-haired freak. But I did not put it together.
How long did you stay married to him?
Well, we were married 10 years altogether.
Okay.
But we were married in 89. And the last that I ever talked to him was in January of 1997. In January, he and I had planned on doing a lecture to expose the government mind control projects. Gunter wrote an article called Operation Open Eyes.
Well, and I think it's also probably important now for people to know, too, that he may have been part of what was called the October Surprise, which some people believe occurred. Other people say it never did. You correct me if I'm wrong, but this had to do with the plot to influence the outcome of the 1980 presidential election between Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. We'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about this, but this had to do with the release of the 52 Americans being held hostage in Iran. We'll talk about that because Ray's husband, Gunther, apparently was going to be the pilot who was going to get them out. We'll talk about that. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Raelynn Allen with us. Raelynn, I want to get into this Operation October Surprise primarily because it'll set the stage for what your husband did and how you came into all these other very strange things we're going to talk about tonight. Now, of course, you know, they held congressional hearings, separate inquiries. They never concluded those allegations that they lack supporting documentation, except the former Iranian president, Bonnie Sadr, former Reagan-Bush campaign staffer Barbara Honegger, and a number of the hostages all contend that the October surprise was a true story of George H.W. Bush negotiating with the Iranians to have the hostages held back until after the election. And your husband, prior to, you hadn't been married yet, he was going to be the pilot to fly them out. Is that correct?
No. He was the pilot that flew the whole negotiating team over.
Okay.
Gosh, can't even remember his name now. It's been so long since I paid any attention to that. But George Bush was on the plane, and a whole bunch of different Reagan campaign people, including Jennifer Fitzgerald, who was George H.W. Bush's girlfriend, longtime girlfriend, and she was on the plane with him. And they flew the vice presidential candidate to an airport outside of Paris, Le Bourget. And Gunter and the other pilots went to a hotel to get some sleep. Well, Gunter hadn't been there longer than an hour, and somebody knocked on the door and said, "You're supposed to fly the vice presidential candidate back." Now, this was not, Gunter and George H.W. Bush were friends. Gunter was 17 years old when he was thrown into the CIA, and, you know, Bush was probably like, Bush had been CIA from the very moment he got back from World War II. But he hadn't gone through a lot of the training schools. And so Gunter's 17, Bush is maybe 37. I don't know the age difference, but I think it's about 20 years. And they went through these schools together as partners. And so they became friends, from the time Gunter was 17, and he was probably 40 at the time.
Jeez. Well, he must have been a grown 17-year-old.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. He was
okay. Very mature.
He was pulled out of... Well, remember, he spoke all of these different languages. You know, he spoke German, Russian, English, Italian, French, and you name it, he could learn it. When I met him, he spoke about 15 languages fluently and, you know, was good and not as fluent, but could literally get along in a bunch of others.
Yeah.
And so he was drafted when he was 17 years old into the Army and then given what is called a lateral transfer to the CIA, and they very quickly put him through anti-terrorist school so he could go back to Europe and infiltrate the Brigati Rosso. And so he was one of the guys on the train in Italy that blew up during the 60s, if you remember those days, when there were terrorists worldwide and they weren't Muslims. They were radical revolutionary terrorists.
Yes, all over the place at that time.
All over the place. We had them here, Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. We had them here in the United States. We had them all over.
Okay, so, you know, he flies the group there. So he contends this really happened.
Well,
it got buried somewhere.
He flew George Bush back from Paris in an SR-71. And, of course, everybody says, oh, he can't fly an SR-71. Well, an SR-71 pilot debriefed him to see if he could fly an SR-71. And, yes, you know, the conclusions were he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
But more than that, after he and I were at this secret meeting in 1990 on Offutt Air Force Base, again with George H.W. Bush, and the director of Central Intelligence, William Webster, and William Scowcroft was there. He was the NSA advisor at that time. And Gunter was there because he had to fly a mission to Moscow. He had to carry a treaty to Gorbachev for Gorbachev to sign. Now, this is in July. He flew that mission July 26th. Now, if you remember the Persian Gulf War, July 25th was when April Glaspie said to Saddam Hussein, oh, we don't care if you invade Kuwait, just go ahead and invade Kuwait. Well, the day afterwards, there are four SR-71s on the way to Moscow. And I was there at the Reno airport when those planes came in. Three of them, get this, George, you know what SR-71s look like.
Yeah.
They're black. They're titanium.
Yeah.
Okay, well, three of those SR-71s were not black. They were desert camouflage. Desert camouflage. And when Gunter finally got back, I said, why were those jets desert camouflage? He said, oh, those are the ones that we keep over in Saudi Arabia below the desert. And so when we need them, we have them up ready to fly, and we don't want the satellites to see them taking
right.
off.
Okay.
It was just amazing. Of course, when they came back, they were all black because the paint had been, burned off.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, Gunter could fly SR-71s. I saw him fly an SR-71. So did my mother and my niece. And so, we have family proof that he was an SR-71 pilot. And he flew George H.W. Bush back from Paris in an hour and 45 minutes.
Now, and the importance of the fact that he was there sets the stage for a lot that you wrote in this book, The Obregon Chronicles, right?
Well,
information come from him, from Gunther?
Well, not about the Obregon Chronicles, no, because the Obregon Chronicles, when I wrote the Obregon Chronicles, I genuinely thought I was a New Age channel. It wasn't until after I had married Gunther and found out about something called voice-to-skull technology. And I'm sure that you've probably had someone on that has talked about Project Bluebeam.
We have.
Okay. The voice-to-skull technology is the same technology that would be used in Project Bluebeam. It's where a voice is transmitted, and the person hears it in their head as though God is talking
yes,
to them.
Yes, they think they're going crazy.
And the very first time it happened to me, I had just graduated. I had a degree in psychology, and I'm hearing voices. And so I committed myself. Well, no, I didn't commit myself. I asked a friend if she could recommend a psychiatrist, because I told her we were having marriage problems. That was my lie. Well, anyway, this woman was also married, her husband, to someone at the Naval Postgraduate School, and so she gave me the number, literally, of the psychiatrists that the people at the Naval Postgraduate School used. And so, kind of filter that through. In other words, I got a Navy psychiatrist. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I went to the Navy psychiatrist, and I said, look, I'm hearing voices, and I think I'm sane, but I'm hearing voices. And so he worked with me for a while, maybe four, five, six times, doing a little bit of hypnosis on me, too, interestingly enough. And I went back into a past life where I was speaking German. But he wouldn't tell me about that life, which was very interesting. I wanted to know what I had said, and he wouldn't tell me. So anyway, he says, oh, you're not going crazy. You are just developing spiritually. Now ask yourself, everybody out there ask themselves, have any of you ever known a psychiatrist who has a woman who's hearing voices in her head, and the psychiatrist says, oh, you're just developing spiritually. Here, go to this spiritual group, and they'll help you.
That doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen. Well, I am so naive and I am so trusting that I go to this spiritual group, and there is a woman there who also is a channel, and she helps me become comfortable with it. And so I really genuinely believed that I was a channel. And some of the stuff that I was bringing through was just absolutely amazing.
I mean, what were they telling you?
Well, a lot of it was about what was going to happen right about now. I mean, one of the lessons that they wrote was on greed. And it was in the 80s, before we had even really entered the era of greed. And they were saying that don't ever judge a greedy person, because a greedy person is just on earth learning the lesson of generosity. And until you have lived every aspect of greed, you can never be truly generous at heart. And so those were the type of lessons. I mean, the Obregon Chronicles actually has a number of those lessons in. What the information that they were giving me, most of it up until the time I started channeling, they actually said taking dictation, up until I started channeling the Obregon Chronicles, they actually were working with me almost in a psychological, almost like they were the psychiatrist and I was the client. And these are voices in my head, you know?
And was this constant?
Every morning I had to agree to meet with them every morning at 8:30. And I met with them every morning at 8:30. Sometimes I had to go up to 7:30 because I had to be at work. But every morning for 10 years, I met with them at 8:30, and I finally had to stop because of my marriage to Gunther. There was no rhyme nor reason nor time or anything. I mean, when I was married to Gunther, it was just one race, you know, first to keep him, to get him out of jail, then to keep him alive. And then when he told me that, oh, those stories that you channeled, you didn't channel them. You weren't a channel. This was just all of this technology that we were using because you needed to be the one that released these stories.
So he was aware of this kind of technology.
Absolutely. Now, I need to tell you, the very first time I ever heard the voices, I'm walking through my house getting ready to feed the dog and cat, and I hear this voice, and it says, Get a pen. We're going to teach you how to do dictation. And I'm going, what? Did I just hear something? Did I have the radio on, television? So I went back in. I went in, fed the dog and cat, and then I was walking back to get dressed. And the voice said again, we said, get a pen. We're here to teach you how to take dictation. And I'm going, oh, my God, I'm hearing voices. What am I going to do? So I grabbed a pencil and a piece of white paper, and the voice said, no, not a pencil. We said a pen.
How did they know that?
Well, I'll tell you in a minute. It took me years to figure it out. So anyway, I got a pen. I got a white legal pad. And the voice said, my name is Isham, and I am here at Whitney Portal with Candor. And for all of this time, I thought there were two. Now I realize that it was one person speaking with Candor, and, you know, speaking openly to me.
Right.
Okay. At that time, the Admiral of the Navy School that I knew as Sam, and I found out many years later, his first name was Isham. So what does that tell you?
Well, I don't follow it.
Okay. The Admiral at the Navy Postgraduate School was named Isham. At the time, somebody said in my head, my name is Isham, and I am here with Candor.
Ah, okay.
Got it?
He was the one.
He was the one. I've never confronted him with it. Of course, he'll probably deny it, but I'm certain it was him.
Ray, tell me about the technology. How does it work?
Do you know, I don't know. All I do know is that my husband, my first husband, John Dyer, so if I've got any former students, physics students out in the audience, maybe they can tell us how it works. I know that it was developed as part of the electronic warfare program for the government. And I can remember entertaining a group of visiting scientists. And they all sat down at my dining room table, my glass-topped dining room table, I might add, for a formal dinner. And there were these two scientists, one from Hayward and one from some scientific laboratory back on the East Coast. And they were arguing about who was the furthest ahead in their research. And the man was just putting her down like you couldn't believe. And finally, she'd had a little bit too much to drink. She smashed her fist down on top of my glass table. All of the silverware threw up, and she said, if I wanted to, she said, I'm so much farther advanced than you that if I wanted to, I could flip a switch, and I could have everyone in Hayward, California, on their knees begging for whatever. Or I could have them in the streets laughing and jumping and dancing and having fun. Or I could have them crying and ready to kill themselves.
Oh, my gosh.
And she got all of that out in about a minute. And at that point, all of the men stood up, picked her up by the arms, took her out, and somebody drove her home. And there are the wives just sitting there staring at each other. And it's sort of like, did we really hear what we think we heard?
And they wanted her out of there fast.
They wanted her out before they heard, you know, before we heard more. And then, you know, they come back and they say, oh, she's just an alcoholic. Don't believe anything she says. She's just crazy. And that's what they say about people who talk out of school.
At what point, Ray, did you start believing that all this was indeed true?
Well, now, I married Gunter in 1989, and I was separated from him in 1996.
Okay.
And I guess I was beginning to believe that, you know, that I had been used in experiments, probably about 1994 and 95.
Was he in on it?
I don't know, George. He says he wasn't. But his boss was his uncle. See what I'm saying? His boss was his uncle, his mother's half-brother. And this is a four-star admiral in Navy intelligence, a man who in 1990, when we were on off at Air Force Base, he was the director of covert operations at that time. I knew him as Wilhelm Johann, William Johann, although I believe his name when he was CIA was William Rader. But I can't be sure of that because they had so many names. I knew them, you know, all the men that I knew under three or four different names.
Why were they doing this to you? What did they expect you to do for them?
That's a good question, George. I don't really know. One of the things I know they wanted is they wanted the stories of Obregon. They wanted me to release those stories. I don't know why. And, of course, I didn't release them for the longest time. And I only released about six of them. There are more, but I was not able to. I have never been able to find the pieces of them. You know, I've got them somewhere in my storage, but there are more. There's another Obregon book, you know, ready to come sometime.
Well, we'll talk about the aliens and the time travel and some of these other truly unbelievable stories in just a moment. Is the book out on the market now?
Oh, yes. You can go to Amazon.com or you can go to ObregonChronicles.com. And there's a place to either order an autographed copy or you can just order it directly from Amazon.
It's huge. How long did it take you to write?
It probably took me about 6 months to finally put it together. Most of it was written. It was written over a 20-year period, and the stories from Obregon were already written. All I had to do was go through and make sure there weren't typos in them. But, of course, there's still lots of typos in it. We just didn't catch them all. But then the other stories, a lot of them were written by other people because I had to document who Gunter was. And so there's a lot of articles documenting who he was by Harry Martin of the Napa Sentinel. Harry was the first one that really debriefed Gunter and wrote the whole story of the October surprise.
Yeah, Sarah McClendon, the late senior White House reporter, also was one of those reporters. We'll be back with more as we talk about aliens, time travel. Is it fact? Is it fiction? The Obregon Chronicles with Raelynn Allen next. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Ray, let's talk a little bit about the alien connection of the book, The Obregon Chronicles. Tell me about this.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. It actually goes back to Gunter's family. Gunter's father was a Habsburg baron. His mother was an Esterhazy. And Gunter's father was actually part of the Canaris conspiracy, the one that, you know, where they tried to kill Hitler. And,
all right.
And then, you know, after Stauffenberg's plan failed, the Canaris conspiracy was not the Stauffenberg conspiracy. It was something totally different. Well, Gunter's father had to flee or he would have been hung by piano wire. And my cousin was Cordell Hull, who was the head of the State Department. and one of the State Department, you know, undercover agents. There's a intelligence wing in the State Department that nobody knows about. It's called Consular Operations, and that was actually the Mission Impossible thing. Well, anyway, Gunter's father ends up under the wing of the State Department, and my cousin Cordell did not trust anybody in our government at the time, sort of like the current series of 24 right now,
where
we're totally infiltrated. And my cousin Cordell trusted my grandfather. He put my grandfather in charge of my father-in-law, and of course my father knew my father-in-law, and my family comes from Bavarian royalty, and it is my belief that Gunter and I were betrothed when I was a very little child to create a new Austro-Hungarian empire. Gunter's mother and father were married to unite Austria and Hungary, and Gunter and I were married to unite Austria-Hungary and Bavaria in the beginnings of the new Austro-Hungarian empire. And that was the reason that we were married. And yes, my father was in on it, because he's the one that took me over there to introduce me.
He was the matchmaker.
Well, something like that. I'm not quite sure if it was a marriage made in heaven, though, but Gunter and I really did love each other. That was for sure.
Okay, now get into the alien part of this now.
Okay. When I first started channeling or receiving dictation, these stories, it's about a planet that orbited a star called Obergon. The star was named Obergon. The planet was named Obergon. And it, the star Obergon became a red giant. When it became a red giant, it interrupted the material lessons of the Obergonian souls who were learning on, who were studying on the planet Obergon. And so they went back to what they refer to as the womb of God to wait for a new planet to be created for them so that they could finish their studies on the new planet. And there was an advance team from Obergon sent to the new planet to get it ready for the Obergonian souls. And that, and the stories that are in Obergon are about the advance team that came to Obergon.
Is this almost like this Project Scorpio that we've heard so much about, where we sent astronauts to them, they sent ETs to us, in kind of like a trade-out?
No. I've not heard of Project Scorpio, but no, it wasn't anything like that. The people from the Syrian area probably started coming here about 200,000 years ago. And they had to bring breeding stock. And the breeding stock came from the Pleiades. And the Cherokees, I'm part Cherokee, by the way. And there is a Cherokee legend, I mean, any Cherokee will tell it to you, that they came from the Pleiades and that they were the original breeding stock for the planet Earth. That every DNA is Pleiadian DNA. And that fits right in with the Obergon Chronicles, because the princess of Obergon was sent to the Pleiades. She was betrothed to the king of the Pleiades. And when she found out that her brother Avalon had totally screwed up everything on Earth, she and her betrothed from the Pleiades were sent to Earth to set back, to put everything back right again.
It doesn't look like they succeeded.
No, they didn't. Because Avalon, when he came here, he brought with him a retinue of rogues. They were pirates. Avalon was, you know, the prince of a very, well-respected family in the universe. And he could do no wrong, and he literally marauded through the universe. He had never learned compassion. He never realized that people have feelings, and that if you torture them or cut them up in little pieces, that it hurts them. You know, he didn't know things like that. Well,
and is that what they would do, I would assume, during abductions?
Well, maybe. I'm not so sure what abductions are. There's so many, I've heard so many different stories from so many different people about what they are. You know, sometimes women get implanted and you know, they become pregnant and then they have these vanishing pregnancies. And so, you know, literally creating a whole hybrid race. I mean, there's just so many different stories about the abductions, and I was abducted, but I have wonderful stories about my abduction, and I can tell you about that a little bit later on. But going back to Obregon and Avalon, I had never even considered publishing these stories. I had written them up, and just a very few people had read them. And then about a year after my husband John died, I'm driving from California to Seattle, and I get so tired that I'm about ready to fall asleep. And so I told my mother, we've got to get off the road or I'm going to have an accident. And I believe that there was some sort of weapon used on me, because I normally can drive from California to Seattle with no problem.
What kind of a weapon?
Whatsoever. I don't know. Something that just put me to sleep, you know, made me realize that I had to get off the road, because I went into a hotel, slept for an hour. Then my mother and I went down to dinner. And who should be sitting in that restaurant but a naval officer? The restaurant was closed. There were just three of us there. Huge restaurant with three people. And it was a naval officer I had known from the Naval Postgraduate School. I had known him as Bob, and he introduces himself as Gunter Rusbacher. And I said, but I thought your name was Bob. And, of course, his name was Bob. His Navy alias was Bob Walker, Captain Bob Walker. But he makes up this story about how his mother was Austrian and she couldn't say baby, and so she called him my Bobby. And so he made up this story about why he had this other name. Well, after we were finished, my mother went back to the room, and he and I walked into the well, he went first. And after I had walked my mother to the room, I came back to the bar. And I stopped outside the bar, and I was looking through the window at him. And I heard this voice in my head, and the voice said, if you walk through that door, your life will change forever. And up until that time, I'd been traveling across the country doing workshops in the activated cellular memory method. That's a whole other story. I don't think we'll have time to get into it, but I
had
near-death experience, went to a school on another dimension, and they taught me this method of releasing trauma from the physical body.
By the way, it was Project Serpo. I said Serpico.
Oh.
In that transfer of astronauts and aliens.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's not one that I'm familiar with, I'm
afraid
to say.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Gunter and I sit down. We order drinks, and he does this Templar toast with me. And he reaches up the glass, he puts up his glass and says, once a Templar, and I put mine up and said, always a Templar. And he looks at me and says, how'd you know that? And I said, well, I'm an expert on the Templars. I know everything about them. I lecture at the United Nations on them. And he, you know, narrows his eyes and looks at me and he says, you don't know anything about the Templars. Nobody knows anything about the Templars. Everything you've ever read is wrong. And I'm going, what?
Did you see this weekend where the Vatican announced that the Knights Templar indeed hid the Shroud of Turin for about 100 years?
No, but I knew that.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I knew that. I know exactly how it got from where it was in Constantinople to Italy. I've been told that story. Well, anyway, Gunter is looking at me, you know, in a strange way, and he just says, everything anybody knows about the Templars is wrong because we have totally hidden our true history. We. And so I'm looking at him, and I go, oh, my God, you're a Knights Templar? And then suddenly, right in front of my eyes, this small-bodied, dark-haired, balding man sort of looks like Sean Connery, and he turns into Arnold Schwarzenegger right in front of me.
Hold on. He turned into Arnold?
He shapeshifted right in front of me. He shapeshifted. And the person that he shapeshifted into had a muscular body like Arnold and golden, kind of curly hair. A real Adonis type person. And so it wasn't Schwarzenegger. He was just had the body of Schwarzenegger. And this person says to me, he says, "My name is Atalon, and you are my other half. I have searched the combined universes for you for millions of years, and now that I have found you, no one will ever separate us." And when he said that, I just sat back in my chair. What can you say? He quoted a character from the Obregon Chronicles. He quoted things from the Obregon Chronicles. I had never published the Obregon Chronicles. How could he have read it? How could he have known that? And, of course, I thought he can't have known that unless he's Atalon. Do you see what I'm saying?
But why are these people after you?
George, I don't have a clue. I really don't.
Have they ever tried to hurt you?
Oh, many times. The very first time I went on the radio accusing George H.W. Bush of treason in, you know, as a result of the October surprise. And by the way, there is brand new information out on the October surprise. Two of my friends are researchers. They have a document from Rudy Giuliani in which Rudy Giuliani, who was an assistant in the Department of Justice, admits that there was foreign interference in the 1980 election. That means Iran, you know, interference from Iran. But I don't know. The other thing that
it sounds to me, Ray, that you may know too much and that they are uncomfortable with that.
Well, that's for sure. That was one of the reasons that I started Rumor Mill News. I mean, after Gunter left me, one of the things that he told me right before he left, I think he must have known they weren't going to allow us to stay together. And he said, "If ever I am not around you to protect you, make yourself so incredible that you become uncredible."
I mean, so when you and Gunther split, Was it amicable or what happened?
No, George, it wasn't. I started into that a little bit ago. I think we had to go to commercial. I was giving a lecture. Gunter and I were scheduled to give a lecture in Florida on mind control. Gunter knew everything there is to know about the government's version of mind control. And he disappeared. I don't know what I thought at that time, but I was so angry that I went ahead with the lecture. I don't know, would we be together if I hadn't gone ahead with the lecture? But I went to Florida, I gave the lecture, it was taken from an article that he had written called Operation Open Eyes, and just Google Operation Open Eyes, and it's all over the internet, people have picked it up, it's everywhere. But I talked about all the many different things that the mind controllers can do with the different forms of mind control. Most people only think of mind control as Manchurian candidates.
Right.
It is so much more than that. It can create activists. It can create, you know, the homosexual activists. It can create the abortion activists. It can create terrorist activists. It can overlay, there's one called an overlay, where you keep your own personality, but you just have an activist attitude, you know, an in-your-face type attitude. And then there's the overwrite, where you get your personality completely overwritten, and, you know, you don't even know who you are. As a matter of fact, one of my sources just said, he contacted me about a week ago and said that there are hit orders out on the programmers. And the reason there are hit orders out on the programmers rather than the programmed is because the programmers are easier to find, and the only way to take this operation out is to kill the programmers. And so it appears that there's somebody somewhere that has decided that Manchurian candidates should not be a part of our government.
There you go. Have you been following the bizarre deaths of these microbiologists?
oh, my God, did I follow that? And the only thing that I can think of, you know, you and Alex Jones broke a story on the avian flu, the live flu that was accidentally shipped out of Baxter to 19 countries.
Yep.
Well, about 2 days before you broke the story, one of my sources had told me a story that the New World Order, the bankers, the City of London, had threatened Obama, the Congress, and everybody in the United States with, you know, either you knuckle under and do what we want you to do in this banking crisis, or we're going to release avian, weaponized avian flu in the United States. Well, Obama did not back down. He, according to my source, this is all according to my source, and this is long before anybody knew about the weaponized avian flu, avian vaccine being sent out accidentally. Evidently, McClellan issued hit orders on CIA bankers. Now, when I say CIA bankers, my husband Gunter was actually the banker of the CIA at the time I married him. But when I'm talking about a CIA banker, I'm talking about people who go back and forth from Wall Street to the CIA and to many of the major banks. And if you just take a look, like John Deutsch, head of the CIA under Clinton, he was a Wall Street banker before he became the CIA. The CIA, one half of it, there are two parts of the CIA. One is this, you know, faction that sort of lives underground.
This covert operation.
Yeah, the covert operation that is made up of a lot of the people who were part of the conspiracy to kill Hitler. And when all of those guys were brought over here after World War II as part of Project Paperclip, everybody thought they were all Nazis. Well, not all of them were Nazis. Some of them hated the Nazis, hated everything that they stood for, because they believed that Hitler was a product of the City of London, the international bankers that we call the New World Order or the Federal Reserve.
Well, they did prop him up in the earlier stages of his regime, didn't they?
Yes, and I know a fellow that absolutely has documentation where he can put Hitler over at Tavistock, the Tavistock Institute, learning how to do all of that neuro-linguistic programming that we saw that got Barack Obama elected. You know, that type of talking to people. I mean, Hitler was mesmerizing. And that's what people can be taught how to do using a form of neuro-linguistic programming.
Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Raylan, there's always been talk that the shadow government would like to reduce the world's population from 6.5 billion down to 500 million. Have you come across any of that in your research?
Oh, absolutely. And that's not the shadow government. The shadow government, I consider the good guys. The people that want to do that, that's the New World Order. They realize that they're losing control of us. People, you know, people are becoming well-read. They're understanding that there's this group of people that want to keep us literally in subservience so they can do anything they want on the earth without having anything to do with us. And yes, that is a very, very real possibility. When I was over in Austria in 1994, I was assigned a Templar who literally filled me in on all of this. I mean, not only did he fill me in on what the New World Order has planned for the world, but he talked about King Solomon's temple and why the Knights Templars really went down there. They didn't go down there looking for Jesus' marriage certificate. They went down there to recover the library that was an identical library to the Library of Alexandria. And it was in a hermetically sealed room underneath the temple, and the Romans didn't know it was there. And so when the Templars went down, they built their stable over it, and they were able to, you know, take the gold. There was a very special type of gold, white gold, that was also underneath the temple. Mm-hmm. They were able to take the gold back. They were able to take the scrolls and all of the other things that were there. They went into the salt mines near Salzburg, and that's where they stayed probably until maybe a few years ago when Austria built this Stiefel, a library that goes down, about 40 stories below ground, where, even a nuclear bomb couldn't destroy them. But this Templar that was telling me all of this history, in kind of an aside, he said, "Oh, you know those overgone stories that that you wrote down?" He said, "We found them in King Solomon's tomb, or in King Solomon's temple. They were part of the library. Those stories were part of the library, and those were the stories that were given to me. And when I met Gunter, he tells me that he is the other half of my immortal soul." And, of course, then after everything the government...
And this is beyond your soulmate, right?
Oh, yeah, this is beyond my soulmate. I mean, a soulmate is just somebody that walks the same path with you. According to the Obregon Chronicles, Gunter and Raylan, pronounced a little bit different from Raylan, but very close to my name. And so Athelon and Raylan were two halves of the same soul. They were created separately, and they would merge together at some point to carry out some major mission, way off in the future. And so, but that Templar over in Austria, he was the one that truly brought me up to speed on everything. And, I found out about the Federal Reserve being a private bank and owned by this, 5 mile square section of London, which is where all the international bankers have their offices. It's called the City of London.
Ray, let me ask you this before we start taking calls with you.
Okay.
Are you still getting bombarded by this electronic mind control?
I don't believe so, no. I was, up until 1990, I was still receiving messages up until 1990. And when I found out it was mind control, I just said, "The heck with this. I'm not your guinea pig anymore." And I just completely turned my back on it. But, George, as I have gone on and on and on, I meet other people who channel such absolutely wonderful, beautiful things that I have to say, is it real? I mean, because I do believe that some people really do channel information. And so there are people out that I think really are messengers from another dimension.
All right, let's go to Springfield, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Deborah, you're on with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Deborah.
I had a life-altering experience, and it had to do with a walk-in, and I was wondering what your take was on people that are call themselves walk-ins.
Well, that's a very interesting thing, because many people thought I was a walk-in after my near-death experience in 1984. This was 5 years before I married Gunter. I think some people genuinely are walk-ins. I can remember assisting a woman that everybody thought was brain dead, and my little group and I loved this woman. We decided we weren't going to let her die. Well, when she came back, she was not the same person. I mean, she didn't die, but she wasn't the person that we, that we knew before. She didn't know her children.
Right.
She didn't know anybody. She was a totally different person. A nice person, but a totally different person. And I think she was a walk-in.
Huh. All right. Let's go to Jim, Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jim. First-time caller.
Yeah, hi. I was wondering if you could tell us any more about this voice-to-skull technology, how it works, how can they see what you're doing, how can they hear you when you talk back to them, and is there any way for targeted people to block out this technology?
Well, there is a Faraday cage, and I have many people who tell me they sleep inside Faraday cages.
Explain what that is to those who don't know.
A Faraday cage is, it's metal. And you literally sleep inside a metal box.
It blocks electronic and electromagnetic waves,
that's
right?
That's exactly what it does. Now,
so this bombardment, one, how do they know?
Well, what he was asking, how do they know what you're doing? Well, my
house. Like the pen-pencil thing.
Yes, exactly.
That happened.
My house had one whole wall that was picture windows. And we lived in a forest, but it never occurred to me that if you were in an apartment across the hill and had binoculars, you could see every single thing that I was doing in my house. And that's how they saw it with me. They were just in one of those apartments with binoculars, and they'd probably put microphones in the house. For all I know, my husband rigged up the microphones in the house. Do you see what I'm saying? Because I'm not sure that my first husband wasn't in on all of this, you know, from the very beginning. And So in my case, I think they were physically watching me and physically listening to me.
Were you an experiment, maybe?
No, I don't think I was an experiment. And the reason I don't think I was an experiment is about 20 years before me, at the same institute, the Naval Postgraduate School, a captain's wife was the experiment. And there were probably a lot of other people besides her. But she actually wrote a book about it. And what she went through was a heck of a lot more difficult than what I went through. I mean, they would even play with her in a sexual way. They were able to heighten her sexuality so that she was literally just about ready to attack every man that she saw.
Huh.
And I loaned my book out and never got it back. And so if anyone ever finds a book, I can't remember what it was titled, but by the time they got around to me, it was perfected. And they knew what they were doing.
And you think it's still being used? Maybe not on you, but on others?
Oh, I know it's being used. There's a woman called Eleanor Williams, and she's got a mind control site where everybody in the world comes over who has ever been a subject of mind control, and they talk about it there on that site. And there was a time that I honestly thought that almost everybody I knew had been used in some sort of a mind control experiment. It is so widespread, and it is so different in the package that it comes in. I mean, we can look at television and we can call that mind control. We can call the music mind control. So it happens in so many different ways. I mean, even if you're listening to the radio sometime and you hear these noises that you don't even know what they sound like, they're like high beeps. Gunter told me those are bursts, and those bursts could be an hour of recorded information shrunk down to something that just is a squeak. But the person that is sitting there in the audience listening to it will literally get reprogrammed from that burst.
We didn't get into time travel, which is also in the Obregon Chronicles.
Oh,
tell
boy.
Me about that.
I wrote about my trip to Mars. And
let's talk about that for a moment.
The man that took me to Mars was this man who was Gunter's boss, the director.
And how did they take you?
I found myself. I went to bed, and then I woke up, and I am standing in a dry creek bed with about 11 other women. And then out of another dimension appears a craft. It's round, and the outside of it is metal, a goldish color metal, kind of maybe copperish color metal. And the door opens, a man walks down, says, "Come on, ladies, let's go." And we all walked up into the, it was small, you know.
And this man was human looking?
Oh, absolutely human. He was my husband's boss. I mean, I knew the man. I knew him from the Naval Postgraduate School. And so we sit down in there. There's benches. We sit around. The door closes, and then the ship just very gradually begins to leave Earth and go toward Mars. And he tells us, "Look out the back window, and you'll see Mars coming. It's really a very beautiful sight." And so I did, and I saw Mars coming. And the spacecraft sets down on a landing strip that, or a landing place that you can, landing pad.
On Mars.
On Mars,
saying.
That you can see was specifically designed for this craft.
This craft, all right.
The door opens. All of the women walk out. They all meet men. You know, they kiss. They. You can tell that they were meeting their husbands or their boyfriends. And I'm there looking, oh, gosh, do I have a boyfriend up here too? And then telepathically, the man that is with me said, I'm your guide. You're not here to meet a husband. You're here to see what.
Now, what were they? Did they have breathing apparatus on? What?
No, there's air on Mars.
There's air on Mars.
There's air on Mars.
A complete atmosphere, you
A
say.
Complete atmosphere, and they even grow things on Mars. And so the admiral took me around, and the first thing he showed me were the ruins where the Martians had lived. And I walked in to the ruins, and I literally felt like little fingers all over my body. And it startled me, and he said, oh, don't worry about them. Those are the crystal people. They kept everybody that lived here in perfect health. And we've taken them back to Earth, and soon we're going to be duplicating the type of crystal structures that they lived in. And then he took me down into an underground facility, and it was a long hall with picture windows on both sides. And he said, do you know what this is? And I looked at it, and I said, is it a zoo? And he laughed, and he said, yeah, it kind of looks like a zoo, doesn't it? And we walked down, and he said, this is the portal to Earth. And then he explained that at the time, this was about 13 million years ago, that Mars knew there was going to be a space wind sweep across Mars and tear off their atmosphere. They had enough time to prepare a time-space device that could transport them to all different parts of the universe. And he's explaining this to me as we're walking down the hall. And then we stopped before one of these windows, and he said, and this is the one to Earth. Come on. And so I stepped in, and then immediately the window closed behind me. And I'm going, oh, my God, I can't get out of here. I'm here in this underground grotto, and I can't get out. Then I heard a voice, and the voice said, well, are you two just going to stand there? You're going to come down here so we can get on with it. And the voices came from two dolphin-like creatures. They weren't dolphins. They didn't have dolphin faces. Their faces were almost like catfish faces. And so we walked down the stairs into the water where the creatures were. I hung on to one of them. The admiral hung on to the other one.
Were they big?
Oh, yeah, about the size of a human.
All right. That's a pretty big catfish.
Yeah, pretty big catfish, right. And they swam up a ramp and said, okay, get off here. And then the admiral told me, wait until the dolphin men have introduced us to the people out there, and then we'll go through the door. So we waited for a little bit, and then he said, it's okay now. And we went out through these big, huge temple doors, and all of the people were waiting there to see us.
Now, what do you mean people? What people?
Well, the people that were in this particular town. It was in Egypt. It was right in the middle of Egypt, probably near where the Temple of Luxor was.
Okay, that's where the portal.
That was where the portal. From Mars, it appeared in Egypt.
Okay. And, well, that makes sense.
And Egypt was so beautiful, the colors, the turquoises, the oranges, the blues. And there were no roads. There was a type of grass. Nobody wore shoes.
What year were you in?
50,000 years ago.
All
50,000
right.
years ago. So, in other words, from Mars 13 million years ago, we came into the future, you know, 13 million years minus 50,000 and ended there. And
were they the builder of the pyramids?
I believe so. I believe I believe the Martians were the builders of the pyramids, yes. And I have no idea what they brought with them. But the most incredible thing was the dolphins talked to the little boy, and when they finished talking with him, he spoke perfect English so that I could understand. And he took me on a journey, showed me the gardens, showed me the food, gave me a piece of fruit that tasted like a very overripe persimmon crossed with a very overripe ripe apricot. It's the most wonderful thing I had ever tasted. And then it was over, and the Admiral, somehow we got from there to a ship. And the ship is hovering over my condo, and the Admiral says, close your eyes. And I'm in a tractor beam. Well, I didn't close my eyes. I opened them and watched while the tractor beam put me back into my bed. And I always kept a dream journal. I jotted down a bunch of notes because I believe they had a program put in me to make me forget it.
And by the way, did you know that the word Cairo from Egypt, Cairo, means Mars?
I had no idea, no.
Yeah. Doesn't that add to the conspiracy even more?
Absolutely it does, yes. Yeah. Well, when I woke up the next morning, I saw all of this information, and one of my girlfriends was staying with me. And I said, Ruby, come in here and look at this. And then I threw back the sheets and of the bed, and I said, and look at that. There's red dirt in my bed. And
jeez.
I had red dirt on my feet, and I had red dirt on the bottom of my white nightgown.
The Travels of Ray. Stay with us. All of you who have been on hold, we'll get your calls when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. All her websites, all of them, are linked up at Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. Let's go back to Ray, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Ray, of everything you've investigated, what scares you the most?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think, George, after you have died and come back to life, and after you've been out there, you know, in the universe, realizing that there is no death, you don't get scared like regular people do. But I do have to admit that when, you know, one of the cabins I was hiding out in was surrounded by men trying to kill me, my heart was pumping a little fast because I didn't know whether I was going to get out of that cabin alive or not. So, but anything scares me? Just the normal things that scare most people, you know, like if a bear is attacking me, you know, I think I'd get a little scared.
Yeah, I don't blame you. To the phones we go. Let's go to Max in San Francisco, West.
Hey
Max.
Thank you, George. Hello. Ray, great story. I really want to read your book. You mentioned earlier about a gold transfer in Austria. It was huge. So I wanted to ask you if this, what I'm about to ask you, relates to that. That soldiers from Fort Chaffee loaded a lot of gold onto trucks and rail cars, and it all went to London. Half of it went to Chase Manhattan Bank, and it cleaned out Fort Knox.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, a story broke by the Canadian Broadcasting System that men were caught. Workers were caught with gold paint leaving Fort Knox, and then the story went away. I'll take my answer off the air, and a great, great guest you are.
Thank you. Yes, they did steal all of our gold out of Fort Knox. It's been empty for years and years and years, but I think it's full now because the gold transfer that Gunter and I were part of in 1994, we had an agreement that we would take out 1,500 metric tons of gold, and that was the Austrian treasury that Admiral Wilhelm Canaris had stolen back from Hitler during World War II and literally shipped to Paraguay, and afterwards it was shipped to Austria or to the Philippines and hidden there with gold that has been hidden there literally since Lemuria went down. There's more gold on Earth than anybody can imagine. And from what I have been told, Earth is a planet that continues manufacturing gold, just like it continues manufacturing oil. But the rest of the story is, even after Gunter is supposed to have died, there are sightings of him in the Philippines and his signature on papers transferring over the rest of the gold, which would the amount would be 500,000 metric tons. And 2 years ago, I was told that all of the gold had been transferred from the Philippines and was in the treasuries of 20 countries. Now, I was told that before there ever was a G20. In other words, 20 countries at this meeting. I'm suspecting, I do not know for sure, but I'm suspecting that the gold that was part of that gold transfer from the Philippines to these countries is going to be what puts us back on a gold standard. And this all has to do with this secret group that Admiral Canaris, who was the father of the man that took me to Mars and the man who took me to meet the king of the world, who was Admiral Canaris, Admiral Canaris put in motion a plan to bankrupt the Federal Reserve and to give countries back control of their money. And all of the money is going to be the same. I mean, you may be paying with a Canadian dollar, but it's worth exactly the same as an American dollar because it's backed by gold, and gold never changes. It's just fiat money that isn't backed by anything that inflates and deflates.
Okay, let's go to Alabama. Tony, first-time caller. Thanks for holding, Tony. I think you're holding, Tony.
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. Go ahead.
How are you and your guest?
Good.
Good. I was wanting to know what sort of or what method of meditation do you suggest to help get in tune with the metaphysical knowledge and to channel the information you would need to show others the truth and help to tap into the collective consciousness,
well,
per se?
I'm really glad that you asked me that question. If you go to raylan.com, I am giving away, just for Coast listeners, I'm giving away two different things. One is my Templar prosperity meditation that literally took me 20 years to create. Go over there, go to Templar prosperity, go to raylan.com.
And spell that, would you, Ray?
RAYELAN.com. And on the left-hand side, you'll see a number of things, and the one that you need to click is the Templar Prosperity. And then when you go to TemplarProsperity.com, you will see a download, and when you download it, you will get not just the Templar Prosperity meditation, but you will get one that is called the Golden Light Meditation, and that Golden Light Meditation is the one that you need to get in touch with your higher self. Once you're in touch with your higher self, you've got all the answers inside of you.
Right. Tell me when and why did you establish rumormillnews.com?
George, I did not feel like I was going to live very long with Gunter out of my life. And I needed to have a huge footprint. You know, like when Danny Castellaro was killed, hardly anybody had ever even heard of Danny Castellaro. But now, you know, I've got 19 million hits every month on my website. And so if something happens to me, they're going to have to, you know, create a pretty darn good story. And so that was the real reason I created Rumor Mill, as an insurance policy for me.
Okay, next up, east of the Rockies, Halifax, Pennsylvania. Hello, Wayne.
Yes. Hi, George. My question is about the New World Order.
Sure.
Last week at the summit, I heard that Brown mentioned in front of everybody that the New World Order is really close. And I'd like to know how that's going to work. Is everybody going to be, I don't know, one government or one type of money or what?
All right, let's hypothesize, Ray, for a moment, how you think a new world order would be structured. There's got to be somebody on top somehow.
Well, it would probably be structured very similarly to communist Russia or communist China, is how it would be structured.
Not like the European Union, maybe?
No, it would be something really horrible and really awful for all of us. And there are many, many people that are hiding in the shadows. You know, when we call them shadow government, I see them as shadow warriors, the good guys. But there are many good guys out there right now. And as I said, there has been a plan in the works to defeat the New World Order since the turn of this century. And it went online in 1968. And you know, the SNL debacle, the dot-com debacle, all of that was part of this plan to totally defeat and bankrupt all of the banks that are owned by the people who own the Federal Reserve. And I think what we are seeing is we are seeing the end of the New World Order right now. What I heard is China and Russia have essentially told Obama and Geithner that there will be a new currency, It will be backed by goals, and it will be, I mean, literally what I have been telling people for the last 14 years was going to happen.
Let's go.
It looks like it's happening.
Let's go to Fort Myers, Florida. Elaine, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, you guys. I have a question. At the very beginning of the program, Ray, you were talking about something about an appendectomy you had when you were 11.
Yes.
And then you said that there was an additional scar that,
yeah,
that
double
you didn't
scar.
Account for.
Right.
I just wondered what the story was behind that.
Well, I think that my eggs were taken. I've never had children in this life. And I think my eggs were taken, and I think my children, who would be the oldest, would be in their 50s now. I think they're around somewhere. And I know that probably wasn't the answer that you thought, but that's what I think happened.
Huh. Okay. Next up, let's go to Lawrence, Kansas. Steve, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing.
Ray, I wanted to ask really two quick questions. One involved your travel to Mars that you spoke of. You said you wrote this down in a dream journal.
Yes.
And I was wondering, by you referring to a dream journal, it kind of throws me off. Did you think this was a dream or that this was a real travel?
No, I wrote it in my dream journal. The only thing that I wrote was Mars, red dirt, spaceship, and then I was sound asleep. But when I woke up and saw, first I saw my feet, and I had red dirt on my feet. Then I saw what I had written, and the whole thing came back to me, you know, just like I was there. So it wasn't a dream. Definitely
the fact that Cairo means Mars, what does that mean to you? What do you think?
Are you talking to me or the caller?
Talking to you.
Talking to me. It tells me that the Martians came to Europe or came to Egypt and probably used their own words. And I will make you a bet that a lot of the Egyptian language is Martian.
It may be.
Yeah.
Arabic, I guess you're saying.
Well, possibly. And interestingly enough, you know, the people that are really in charge of the gold right now are a number of Arabs right there at the top of Africa, and a number of Africans. So the people on the planet who control the gold, and from what I am being told, who literally will be behind making our new monetary system, are from the Philippines, Africa, and this group of Arabs that live at the top of Africa.
Amazing. Did you know the late Sherman Skolnick?
Oh, Sherman and I were close friends, yes.
Yeah, I used to have one of my local show in St. Louis for a long,
oh,
long
time. Oh, did you really? I bet that was one. Wasn't he a kick? I just loved him.
Well, let me tell you, he uncovered corruption with judges in Chicago. But you know what? They were always after that guy, weren't
they?
You know,
he was one of the bravest people I ever knew. Truly. He and Sarah McClendon, too, both of them. They were both good friends of mine, and they were good friends with each other. And I believe Sherman was murdered. And I believe Sherman was murdered so that he would not spill the beans on Barack Obama.
Out of Chicago.
Sherman knew everything. And, you know, I can remember when my lawyer was murdered. And all of his things were turned over to his brother, who, you know, was up on criminal charges for cocaine. And his brother turned all of the things over to the FBI, and all of the charges were dropped. So, in other words, all of the research, all of the debriefing that our attorney, Paul Wilshire, did with my husband, most of it was lost. Fortunately, I do have quite a number of it. But the same thing happened with Sherman. All of his research was thrown into a dumpster and thrown away.
Well, look what happened in Nikola Tesla when he died. They raided his place and took everything.
You know, George, I got to tell you something. I was just given land. I've been asking friends and readers and everyone, we've got to have an archive. We've got to gather together all of the work, like Sherman Skolnick or Rodney Stitch.
Like a library, you mean?
Like a library. Somebody gave Rumor Mill News Archive 14 acres, and the papers were signed today, the very day that I'm on Coast to Coast.
What state is that located in?
Ohio.
Really?
And I live in California.
So what are you going to do with that? Build something?
Yes. My assistant, who lives in Ohio, is moving to the property immediately, and then we're just going to try to raise the money to build, you know, the facilities so that we have a place to store all of the fantastic information that researchers and investigators are digging up.
You better put some security there, Ray.
Oh, absolutely, and make it fireproof, too. One of the things that you and I both know is that the people who own the Federal Reserve own controlling interest in most corporations, meaning all of the media, meaning all of the book publishing companies, meaning all of the people that make the books for the schools. So everything we have been fed all of our lives is from their angle. And it takes real researchers to get to the truth.
You had mentioned something right at the top of the show about POWs and that one of your husband's missions was to go and find POWs.
George, that is such an awful story.
We left them behind, didn't we? We left a lot behind.
We left a lot behind. And the story that I was talking about were the POWs in the war that didn't exist down in Laos.
Right.
And my husband's group was sent in right at the same time that Henry Kissinger is over in Paris at the Paris Peace
Negotiating,
Club.
Yeah.
And Kissinger gave up the mission, told them where the mission was going to be fielded, how many they were, what they were dressed like. Kissinger did it supposedly to, you know, in the spirit of openness and honesty. Every single person was murdered, was killed by the North Vietnamese, with the exception of my husband, who was taken as a POW. The things that were done to him, you never even hear about it. You never hear about the types of tortures that were done to him. About the only thing that people hear about is the bamboo under the fingernails and the fingernails pulled out repeatedly.
Ouch.
With pliers. That happened to him. I actually have pictures on my website of Gunter's fingernails, lack of fingernails. They were pulled out so many times that he had no fingernails. But the worst was they would slit open his stomach, plant bamboo in it, sew him back up, and a week later they'd pull out the bamboo after it had grown into his intestines. Ugh. And they would do that over and over again.
Spartanburg, South Carolina. William, you're up with us. Hi, William.
Hey there, George. Hey there, Miss Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Ray, I'm doing pretty good. You have some supporters here in South Carolina. A couple of our radio programmers over here on WORD, they believe that the One World Order is coming and that there are people within our government trying to push it forward. Now, as far as Barack Obama goes, I don't know where exactly he stands. I think he's just a man who's sort of thinking he's got the right idea, and there's other people sort of pushing his buttons because they know what they want. But one thing mm-hmm. that's very interesting is that somebody said this to me. They said, look, Barack Obama is not what anybody thinks he is. He's not the Antichrist. He's not bringing about world destruction. He's a test subject. If you are Satan and you're trying to figure out a way to get into the world and win, even though the Bible's telling you you're going to lose, you need test subjects. You need to watch how humans react to their politicians, to their leaders. You need to see if you can't actually pop up out of nowhere with no real past, no real anything, and become president of the United States or ruler of the world. We've had at least four presidents, guys who popped up out of nowhere, had no past, no nothing, and somehow became president. We have world leaders that have done that throughout the centuries. What Barack Obama's just the newest tech subject that Satan's looking at. Barack Obama was probably Christian, but he doesn't realize that Satan's sitting there watching, all right, I see how this guy got in here. We're going to try it again with this next guy. And by when my time comes, I've got it perfectly written down. I know how not to mess up.
Well, we better keep our eyes then on the next one and maybe the next one and the next one.
Well, you know, I don't know if Richard Hoagland has talked to you about his hyperdimensional theory of Barack Obama and the
election. Oh, yeah, he
election.
Has. He has.
Richard and I agree on a lot of things, and I'm not quite sure that Barack Obama is this evil person that everybody
thinks he is. I don't think he is. I think he's trying in a very difficult time. You know, he's a politician, which means half of the population is not going to agree with him. The other half will.
Yeah. I actually have some information from Freedom of Information Acts about his grandfather that put his grandfather working for Admiral Wilhelm Canaris during World War II at the Boeing plant as a spy. Now, who's Admiral Wilhelm Canaris? He's the father of the man that took me to Mars. And then the man that took me to the underground installation to meet Admiral Wilhelm.
The synchronicity is too much. I'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you and Raylan Allen with us as we talk about the strange things going on in the world. Shadow government, as you say, are the good guys, but are they shadowy because they're protecting themselves, Ray?
Yes, they have to because... the people that we call the New World Order, the Illuminati, Rothschild, City of London, Federal Reserve Group, they are very, very dangerous and very, very devious. And they literally have people in every government around the world, from the city governments all the way up to the federal governments. And I'm sure you've done shows about the Promise software. The software that Bill Hamilton invented in the late 70s.
That got ripped off by the CIA? Yeah.
Well, and it got ripped off even from the CIA. It got ripped off by a lot of different people. And there is a group of people that are using that Promise software. I'm sure they work for some sort of, worldwide revolutionary order, but it is underneath the New World Order. You see, the communism and capitalism are just the same side of the same coin that the New World Order made. And it doesn't matter, whether a country turns communist, the New World Order people are going to control it just as they would if the country were capitalist. And so this Promise software in the hands of the wrong people can turn anybody overnight into the most horrible criminal, and what they turn them into is pedophile murderers. There was a district attorney in Florida that just got convicted of, raping a 5-year-old in his care. Well, how do we know he really did that? Or how do we know that the people who control this Promise software didn't set him up? And, of course, what they would have told him is, if you tell anybody, we will kill your wife and child slowly in front of you.
Or he could have done it, too.
Or he could have done it. I mean, one of the things that my husband wrote about was the pedophile eradication teams that Rudy Giuliani had fielded out of New York to go into the East Bloc countries and rescue the children that had been kidnapped off the streets of New York.
That's pretty dramatic.
My husband was one of the members of the original pedophile eradication teams that were picked up by Europol. I mean, after the Brussels pedophile, where they found out in Brussels that all of these politicians were pedophiles and were stealing their children and having sex and then murdering them. Well, this is the way the New World Order controls its puppets. They put people in power that have the most horrible secrets that they need to keep hidden, and that's how they keep those people in power.
Did you know Bill Cooper at all?
I did know Bill Cooper. He was part of my husband's Com-12 team, and he was one of the first people. You see, when I married Gunter, the press that was put out on him was that he was a low-level con man that was, marrying and defrauding wealthy widows. Well, Bill Cooper was one of the people who wrote the real story of who Gunter Russbacher really was, because they were together in whatever Com-12 was.
Were you a wealthy widow?
Are you kidding?
All right. Lisa, let's go to Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi. It's a great pleasure speaking with both of you.
Sure thing.
My question, I grew up, my father was in the military, and he belongs to a lot of organizations, and one of the organizations he's belonged to is the Knights of the Templar, and my question was, Does everybody who belongs to those, do you think they know all of the history? Like, would he know all of the history, but I know he can't speak about it? Or is it just a certain few that are higher up that know everything?
I'll let you answer this, Ray, but I think it's just a certain few, Lisa, like the Freemasons, for example. 99% of them are, you know, dedicated, hardworking people. There is that level of people, though, who know a lot of things. Ray, go ahead.
Well, there are all sorts of Templar orders that are saying they are real Templar orders. According to my husband, they're all frauds. According to my husband, the Masons built their order on the charred remains of Jacques de Molay, the last Grand Master of the Templars. And according to my husband, he says that none of the Templar organizations that we see these days are the real thing. The real ones are still underground because their enemy, their age-old enemy, you know, the people that literally burned them at the stake, they're still in power. It's that same ideology, that same bloodline, you know, the Illuminati.
Let's go to Boulder, Colorado. Pete, you're up with us, west of the Rockies. Hey.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Mr. Murray, I really enjoy your shows. I've been listening for years.
Thank you, Peter.
I kind of almost amazed with the level or degree or range of your subjects and your patience and tolerance to be able to deal with all those things, which a lot of those are contradictory sometimes from show to show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you are really doing a very good job. I would have a lot of questions for Ms. Allen, but I was something what caught my interest some maybe half an hour ago or so. She mentioned that President Obama stood up or took the position, was not able, no, will not be bullied or threatened by the city in London when the issue, supposedly the issue of some pandemics was brought up.
Yes.
Yeah, he stood up.
And I would like to know more details about it.
Okay.
But I really would like to know who Obama really is. And where is he standing?
You know, I'm so glad that somebody brought us back to that. That is a wonderful question. As I said, Barack Obama did tell Admiral McClellan, do something about this. And Admiral McClellan, fielded a special operations group and went after the people that had the weapon that had threatened us. Now, I don't know whether or not that weapon had anything to do with the vaccine that the Baxter Labs
screwed
accidentally
up.
Released to 19 countries. And we still don't know, you know, about 12 of those countries. But anyway, getting back to who Barack Obama was, there's this document that says that his grandfather worked for Wilhelm Canaris, William Canaris. Canaris is the man that created Faction 2, the group to take down the New World Order. I mean, just think about this.
To take down
the New World Order. That's what this shadowy group that I keep referring to. They are the ones that were set up with everything that they needed to know to literally destroy the New World Order. So look, here we've got this document. I don't know whether it's true or anything, but it surfaced on the internet, and it actually got there by a friend of mine whose research abilities that I respect. He's a meticulous researcher, and he got it from a Freedom of Information Act. Traces Stanley Dunham to Boeing, and he was a spy for Wilhelm Canaris of the Abwehr. Again, the father of the man that took me to Mars.
That's a strange story, too, you know.
I know. I am hoping that Barack Obama is a Trojan horse. In other words, everybody thought he was the typical communist that they could get elected and he would usher in communism for the whole world. And look at it right now. You know, we've got communists in South America. We've got communists in El Salvador. And Mexico is just about in revolution. There's a huge communist contingent in Mexico, has been there since Leon Trotsky went to Mexico when he was exiled, when he was thrown out of Russia. But anyway, the other thing that I just found out about Barack Obama, it's just amazing. One of my sources sent it to me, along with a picture of him shaking hands with the Queen. You don't shake hands with the Queen if you are below the Queen. You can only shake hands with the Queen if you are, of royal blood.
According, that's interesting.
According to my source.
Unless he didn't know better.
Well, that could be too, you know. But I doubt that. Remember I told you they sent me to etiquette school? Of course,
yes.
They sent him to etiquette school too. What I was told is he's of the bloodline of Haile Selassie, who was of the bloodline of King Solomon and Sheba. Haile Selassie was called the Lion of Judah. There are various lions around the world. They're kings, and they are called lions. The man, Philip of Burgundy, was the Lion of Burgundy. It was his grandson that founded the Philippines, and it's named after him. My husband was the Lion of Salzburg. The lions are directly descended from the House of David.
That's interesting.
And Solomon was descended from the House of David. And what this man told me is Barack Obama's father is not Barack Obama Sr. It's not, his mother isn't even Stanley Dunham, the girl, his mother, Ann Dunham.
Well,
Stanley Ann Dunham.
Who are they then?
We don't know who they are. But this man, he hasn't given me any proof or anything, but most of the information that he has given me over the 10 years I've known him has been accurate, and he's the one that told me.
I like the fact, though, Ray, that you do qualify your statements, with I don't know that it's true or whatever, because, I mean, you're making some pretty profound statements, but at least you qualify it.
Yeah, and I have to. I mean, my gosh, my own credibility is out there. I mean, even when I was writing an article tonight about the 20 countries that the Philippines have already given their gold to, and I think 20 countries, the G20 is meeting over in Europe right now.
You're saying Barack Obama is royalty.
That's what I was told. I was sent the picture of him shaking hands with the Queen. And you don't shake hands with the Queen unless you're royalty.
Let's go to Columbus, Ohio. Karen, what's your question?
Good evening. Hi. I'm so glad to be on the show. And, Ray, what an incredible life you've led. I have a quick question. This goes way back at the beginning of the program, George. You mentioned that she knew things about intergalactic wars or fighting going on with other aliens,
yes,
or whatever. Way back about 10 years ago, Art Bell actually interviewed some of the heads of NASA, and he had, if you remember David John Oates with Reverse Speech, he had him do reversals on these guys. And I had actually purchased a program from him and saw them do the reversals, and they kept mentioning Venus, and that we were actually in wars with Venus, and that we had some military bases on Venus. Do you know anything about this?
I don't. How about you, Ray?
I don't know anything about Venus, but I do know that we have a space fleet. They are American pilots, and one of them is in jail for murder here in California. And, of course, there's no possible way that he could have done it. All you have to do is read on the Internet, and you realize there's no possible way this man, should even be implicated in this. But he's in jail, probably for life. His wife would be interesting for you to talk about, Richardson, Joan Richardson.
Okay. You also believe that Stanley Kubrick, the filmmaker, director, was murdered as he was trying to finish Eyes Wide Shut, because he basically wanted to illuminate us about the Illuminati.
Exactly. He died 4 days after the final cut. From what I have heard, I don't even know who told it to me. He was not happy with the final cut, and he was going to put in even more incriminating information about the Illuminati and these ridiculous rituals that they have.
And they were ridiculous, no doubt. Phoenix, Arizona, we go. Hello, Steve. Take it away.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hi, Ray. Just wanted to ask you a little bit about the Jesuit influence in the world, because I've read a lot of literature from presidents to their aides and the like of talking about the infestation of the Jesuit order and their attempts to manipulate the entire world from corner to corner. And we've hit pretty much every other, you know, code word out there, Illuminati, Freemasonry, and I was just wondering, in your experience, where have you seen them play a role?
Well, interestingly enough, I think, you know, after the Templars were killed, I believe that the power went from the Vatican into the Jesuits, and that the Jesuits literally became a very evil order and were actually, in my opinion, I don't think you can find this anywhere, but in my opinion, I believe the Jesuits owned the British East India Trading Company that were responsible for the Boston Tea Party. But, here's the but. I believe the Templars have hidden and possibly still are hiding within the Jesuit orders.
Wow.
So, in other words, you've got an evil order literally infiltrated by a good group of people who will not allow you to know that they are good, good. Do you see what I'm saying?
One other question for you, Ray. I've also read some information on there's documents that kind of indicate there's a possibility that Rome may own Britain and Britain may own America, literally by contract, somewhere buried in history. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I do. There are three cities that supposedly control the world, and it's the City of London, the economic capital, the Vatican, the religious capital, and Washington, D.C., the military capital. And supposedly, they were all controlled by the same people, the ones we call the Illuminati. But it is my opinion that Pope Benedict is no longer under their control. And as a matter of fact, last Easter, he made this incredible speech where he was literally throwing out the money changers, throwing out the Federal Reserve. That was the way that I interpreted it, and a lot of other people interpreted it. And now, 1 year later, almost on the anniversary of his speech, Italy has an earthquake. Huge amounts of Italian, you know, architecture and antiquities
destroyed,
have been ruined. And I believe that it's the New World Order revenge, because, of course, they can cause earthquakes, they can cause fires, they can cause floods, they can cause hurricanes and tornadoes. They control the weather these days. And I think they got back at the Pope.
Well, let me tell you, Ray, and when you look at everything that's been going on, chemtrails, everything, manipulation, it is scary stuff.
Yeah.
We're almost out of time, Ray. Would you once again tell folks where they can get the Obregon Chronicles?
Well, go to Raylan, that's the easiest, RAYELAN.com, and you'll see the Obregon Chronicle book there. You'll see my book, Diana, Queen of Heaven. And on the other side, you'll see all the other things. And go take a look at that prosperity meditation. It's a Templar prosperity meditation. I was given permission by the Templars, the real Templars, to call it that. And they told me what they used it for, during the Middle Ages. But it is a meditation that will put you in touch with your higher will, the higher will of God. And when the money comes to you, you will use it correctly for the right purposes. In other words, you won't screw up your life and your karma.
Very good. Thank you, Ray. Appreciate you being on the program. Fascinating. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lux Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.